Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Fiction, science fiction, horror, fantasy, crime, LGBT, thriller.
You have now entered the House of Mystery with your hosts, Eric Shapiro, David North Martino, John Copenhaver, and Al Warren.
Heard on KCPD 106.5 FM Los Angeles,
102.3 FM Riverside,
and 1050 AM Palm Springs.
Welcome back into the House of Mystery, and of course, I'm Al Warren. Mr. David North Martino is in the East Coast, man on the street doing the reports for us.
That's right. Man on the street reporting.
Yeah.
Right.
Anything new going on?
No.
He's our man on the street reporter, but he never watches the news and he doesn't go near anything. So he doesn't even know. He knows nothing about what's going on right now. So
I stay away and I keep myself out of trouble.
That's right. But he knows how to buy good grass for his cat.
That's right.
He goes to the pet store and buys grass. So he's a kind man. He keeps his cat in the lap of luxury.
Sure, yeah, that's right.
You know. But anyway.
I pamper that cat. I do.
You do. You need to have six or seven of them. Why don't you become a cat lady?
Don't tell my wife that.
Why? She'd like that, wouldn't she?
No, she would.
Oh, she wouldn't.
She would. She'd love it.
Oh, well, then you get a whole... Go to the pound and just say, I'll take them all.
No. One is plenty.
Yeah, that's enough work.
I don't think he'd be happy.
No.
He likes being the only cat.
He likes being the getting anything he wants, right?
That's right.
He's the boss. And,
he is.
He gets the grass.
That's right.
I'm buying grass for that other cat. What are you doing? Well, okay. So we're coming to an end of another week. Now, today... we've got another interesting writer, and today we're going to be talking about her book called Pesticide, and that's the Linder and Donatelli Mysteries. So, Kim Hayes, thank you for coming on the show.
It's a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Well, it's always a pleasure talking to people, writers and stuff, and you've been around. And I mean that in a good way. I mean, you're living in Switzerland. Oh, I mean, because you lived in Vancouver,
you lived in the States,
and now you live in Switzerland. And so you really like to get the feel of the world. So, what's your life been like with those countries and that travels? I guess you see a lot.
Well, I had parents who moved around. So some of my most dramatic moving happened when I was a child. And I moved, I lived in the United States, in Virginia, actually, with my parents. And my father got a job in San Juan. I moved to Puerto Rico. I started first grade in Puerto Rico. And then in the middle of high school, my father got a job in Vancouver, British Columbia. And so right in the middle of high school, I moved from a small school in Puerto Rico to a huge public secondary school in West Vancouver, actually. And then, you know, after 2 years there, I moved to the Boston area. So it was very much of a, I mean, to some extent, that was my choice. So the moving to Boston. And of course, it was my choice to marry a Swiss and come and live in Switzerland. And now, in some ways, I've settled out because I've now been here for 34 years, living in the same city, Bern, and the same neighborhood, in fact, in Bern. I've lived in two different houses, same neighborhood. So my traveling days seem to be over. But if you want, in terms of what has that been like, I do think that it's very clear, it's not surprising, but it certainly gives you a lot of sensitivity to what it means to be an outsider in a different culture and how to adapt.
Yeah, and I guess it would also feel like running from the law.
Yes. In a way, you get the word culture shock is definitely not just a word when you're the, or a phrase, when you're a person who's moved from, from Puerto Rico to Vancouver and started a new school, you know, that, or in fact, moving to Switzerland, getting married and 2 weeks later moving to a new country. There is such a thing as culture shock. It's not just one of those words that sociologists use. So,
yeah. Oh, I'd imagine it gives you a different perspective on home life too, I guess.
Yes.
And how you see things where you're at now from all of the other places you've been. I'd imagine it's, you look at things differently than being born in a country. So, yeah, it's interesting. That's really interesting. So this book, Pesticide, how did you decide to write a book centered on something like this? Like, it's a murder mystery, of course, and you got the detectives. Mm-hmm. But pesticides, so you're using that as kind of an angle in this, as a point, even enough to be the title.
Yes. Well, the book is about, among other things, it's about organic farm, and that is quite central in the book. One of the people who's murdered in the book is an organic farmer, and living out in the country, and a very determined one. And he is actually, his body is actually found sprayed with pesticide. So that's obviously somebody's attempt to make a statement, or so it seems certainly to the detectives and to everyone, about basically to hell with your convictions, you know, because certainly that's one of the big things with organic farming is that you don't use any synthetic fungicide, pesticide, any of that kind of thing. So I find organic farming interesting. I think it's, you know, a fairly heroic thing for people to try to do. It's certainly more difficult than conventional farming and takes place on a smaller scale. And I was already interested in it and actually written a small article about it for an English language magazine. And that when I got ready to write a mystery, it wasn't as if I said, I'm dying to write about organic farming and pesticide, but I was dying to write a mystery. And so when I started to think about what I wanted to write about, this was a topic that I was interested in.
So would it be safe for me to say that kind of the underlying point of this story is about organic farming and about the use of pesticides, especially because you did use it kind of, I think, as a murder weapon in a way.
Well, in fact, the guy is already dead, it turns
yeah,
out.
That's kinda, yeah, that's
kind of, brain, at least. I mean, they didn't choke him with it. But it's not, well, I'll say this. It's not a preaching book. It's not a, thank God, otherwise who wouldn't want to read it, but it's not that I'm have a secret agenda that I'm trying to preach about how wonderful organic farming is, but I do think it's very interesting for when we're all fascinated and concerned about climate issues to actually find out how the Swiss do organic farming. 15% of Swiss farmers do farm organically, and that is 15%. So it's not a huge number. All Swiss farmers get large subsidies from the government. I mean, they would say not large enough, of course, but organic farmers are get subsidies for more money and for different things, or at least their rules are much stricter. Let's put it that way. They don't get money. They don't get labeled organic unless they follow very strict rules. And I find that interesting. So I guess what I wanted to do when I, first of all, I decided to write that I wanted to write a novel, which I hadn't done in my whole life. And I waited until, my son had gone to college. Secondly, I decided I wanted to write a mystery. And then I decided, well, I want to research something interesting when I'm writing this mystery, something I really want to know more about. So it was kind of a selfish decision. I thought, well, one thing I want to know more about is farming, and in Switzerland particularly. And so why not write a mystery about it? So all of this, I'm not saying you're not right, but it wasn't as if I said, I need to make a point about organic farming. It just kind of, it grew, let's say, organically out of my concern. So.
Well, with your research, did you what was your process, I guess, on getting your research for pesticides and organic farming and all the stuff that's within your book?
Well, there's also quite a bit about growing marijuana in my book, including growing organic marijuana and growing, what kinds of drugs are available. So it wasn't just, it's not only organic farming. I had to do quite a bit of research on a number of things, but I had a lot of fun researching organic farming and really going and talking to farmers and spending not hundreds, but a number of farmers. I went and spent a day with them. I interviewed people who processed organic foods, who sold organic foods through, bought it for large stores, and so people who were middlemen between the farmers and the big grocery stores. I went and talked to someone at one of the central organizations for organic farming in Switzerland, and talked to them about, and this I think was particularly interesting, how they inspect organic farms to make sure that they're following the rules. Because if you break the rules, you get de-organified. You can be a farmer, but if it turns out you're not following the rules, you don't get the label of being an organic farmer. So I found that fascinating. Not very surprising, really. I mean, you can't just say, ha-ha, I'm an organic farmer, and do whatever you want. Somebody has to check that you're following the rules. So I had a lot of fun. I really found it very interesting. And I hope that that comes through in the book, because you don't want to turn it into a big information dump about farming. But I think for a lot of people, it's fun to find out how this really works.
Yeah, it's an interesting, what do you think people get wrong about the whole organic scene in the public? Like, what do you think people, they just see it as some one thing and it's not?
Well, this I should be able to state conclusively, but I don't, I think there are so many opinions about this, but it as much as I believe in it, and I mean, as much as I respect the people who do it, and I can, you're not poisoning the water, you're not poisoning the air, you're taking very good care of your animals, which you don't have to be organic to do. Lots of farmers have rules about how to take care of their animals. But as many good things as organic farmers do for the earth, it is not, I am not convinced that it is so work intensive. And it produces, you work much more to produce much less, because let's face it, pesticide works, it gets rid of all the things that destroy crops. And so if you work without any poisons at all, you're going to produce less. And I hope, I mean, if you get a lot of phone calls from organic farmers saying this isn't true, I'm glad to hear. I mean, I'm glad to know. But what I want to say is I don't see how it could feed the world. The way it's done in Switzerland, at least, the way I have learned, what I have learned about organic farming, I think I have total respect for it, but I can't see how you could feed everybody that way on small farms with people working so intensively. So I think people romanticize it, is what I'm saying. I think it's very much romanticized.
Yeah. No, I think it would be an awesome thing to be able to do that with everything we have. Everything is processed organically rather than with chemicals, but you're right. It's just not going to happen, you know. And Kim Kardashian couldn't have the skincare with just natural products. There has to be some chemicals to make it, you know, happen, you know. It's the reality we face, you know. But this is still a mystery story. So now, and you've got two characters here that are centered. They're the investigators in the story, yeah. The detectives. And I notice there's also a sexual tension between them. So you kind of got it all going on here. Where do these characters come from for you? Like, how do you create two interesting people like this?
Well, of course, one, you know, what you want more than anything, I think, as a writer, not just a mystery writer, is you want to create characters that are going to grab people. And if you're going to write a series like me, you want characters that people will want to see in the next book. You know, that is what makes us, people might be very interested in seeing what the new plot is. But more than anything else, I think they often just want to follow the characters that they like so much, like see their friends again. That's certainly how I feel about a number of series. I mean, so I had to think about, as you say, you know, how am I going to create these two people? I wanted them to be quite different, and yet they work very well together as a team. So I wanted to think about ways to make them complement each other. And one is a man who's in his mid-30s, and one is a woman who's in her mid-40s. So she's not only senior in age, he is her assistant. And one of the things that was important to me was to, because I wanted to use him to show what the Swiss are like, I made him an Italian, a first-generation Swiss. So his parents were working class Italians who came to Switzerland, as men did. Now there are other immigrant groups that come, but there was a period when one of the big immigrant groups was Italian. So he's of Italian, not only of Italian descent, but he speaks Italian at home. And so I wanted to make them contrasting personalities that would still be able to work together well and have a, you know, a cooperation in their work, and then a sort of sexual tension between them as well.
How do you create your dialogue? Can you hear your characters? You know, do you have an inner monologue? I'm just trying to find out if you're hearing voices.
I definitely hear, hearing voices is a perhaps slightly over the top, but when it's flowing, and I mean, you've talked to so many writers, I know you have, and all writers must say something very similar. You know, that there are the moments when you sit there and you plonk out the words on the keyboard and you're thinking, oh my God, you know, how many more words am I going to get out today? And then there are the times when it's flowing. And when it's flowing and you're really into what you're writing, you're in the scene, then you do, the dialogue just seems to flow and you do hear it. You do hear the people talking. And I mean, you know, again, I couldn't tell you whether what, you know, Renzo has a deep voice or not or anything like that, but the words sort of seem to flow onto the page. I'm sure that's what most writers say.
I hear voices.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, he wakes up with a shovel and beside his bed and, you know, it's a different story.
Muddy boots.
Yes.
Well, that's, but how much of yourself is in these two characters? I mean, because typically with writers, you know, you're in everything in the book. I mean, you've written the book, but, or is there one character in particular that has more of you in it?
I would say that both of them have a lot of me, but that I was really trying to be very careful to also make them different from me. I mean, I'm not talking about age and looks and male, female or anything, but of course, you know, in terms of things that they think, I definitely tried to make this relatively young, from my perspective, Italian man, you know, he listens to music that I wouldn't listen to, you know, he's interested in sports in a way that I'm not. I mean, I didn't just, those are perhaps cliches, but I, you know, I gave him a lot of interests, you know, I wanted to make him realistic to the type of young man that he is. But you know, I also wanted to make him funnier. So it, of course, you could. I mean, it's, and I think this often happens when two people are friends, that you know, one has a sense. They both have a sense of humor, but one is the one that makes you laugh more than the other. So I've given him sort of the. It's not like my books are. I wish I could say my books were funny all the way through, but that's not the kind of book they are. But he is the one who makes himself laugh and makes the reader laugh and often makes Juliana, his boss, laugh too.
Now,
I like making people laugh, by the way. So I guess I put that into him and not into the woman. So, you know, I was worried it would make him more appealing, but several people have told me they particularly, you know, that she's their favorite character. So, that's good. I like that when I hear that.
Yeah. So when you, this is going to be a series, and when you've kind of got that in your mind, do you have this outlined ahead of time? You kind of know how many books you want to do with these characters and where you want to go with them, and you just kind of work your way there? Or is this just totally ad lib?
It is extremely ad lib. In fact, the reason that this is a series, in fact, is because I wrote, this book is actually not the first book I wrote. The first book I wrote, which is now coming out as the second in the series, I revised, I, you know, sent it out to agents, I sent it to small publishers, I revised some more, and finally, I just put it aside and I said, well, I'm going to write another one. So let's see. And so I wrote Pesticide. And of course, I worked on that one too. And I kept on, as I was trying to get an agent for that one and get a publisher for that one. At that point, I did think, really, this is fun. Well, not getting published is not fun, but I found that I liked writing mysteries and I was more or less retired from other work. So I just decided, okay, I'll write a third one. So that's how I wrote a series. By the third one, I was also thinking, well, maybe I'll try with this one. You know, they talk about how you have these novels in your drawer and this is one of the myths. And I don't think I could ever keep a novel in my drawer because in the end that I do believe, I mean, so far it looks like at least those three are going to get published. So, I mean, the second one I wrote is published. I have a contract for now the first one I wrote in the series, which has, I've obviously adapted it so it works as a second. So all I'm saying is it was definitely not planned. If anything, it was the opposite of planning. It was desperation. I just kept writing another book to see what would happen and if it would get published. So finally, one of them did. That's the opposite of planning, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, you're just kind of out there. But that's good too, right? It's a little bit more as it comes. But you ever worry about sometimes – as you're going through the story, kind of forgetting what happened in book one when you're writing book three, in
absolutely.
The sense of, yeah. So how do you keep track of that if you're not outlining? How does that work for you?
Well, Well, I mean, of course, I mean, I'm outlining individually. I mean, not, I do some seat of the pants writing, but I also have a sense of what, where each book is going as I'm writing it. But you're absolutely right. I really, this is one where it's very nice to have a wonderful editorial director, Dan Mayer, who, you know, reads these books and I'm sure catches things. At least reading now the second one, he pointed out some things that didn't, that he said, didn't you, I mean, these are little things, but I, wait a minute, isn't Juliana's son 10? You're saying he's 11. Did he, you know, was, is that what you want to say? Or have you, you know, did he have a birthday and things like that? But in greater ways, you can also kind of forget what you've said has already happened. And I just have to go back and read stuff again. There's, you know, it's not like I can carry it all in my mind. I mean, and I've only got so far three books. I mean, imagine a Michael Connelly or somebody who's got to carry Harry Bosch through book after book after book. And you know, it's, and his readers would notice if he messed up on his Harry's history. So I don't know how people with long, long series, or Donna Leon with 31 Guido Brunetti books, you know, she keeps keeps everything straight somehow.
You need an assistant.
Well, I'm sure at some point, if you're successful enough, you can get an assistant. Mm. I do not have an assistant.
Exactly. Well, now that you've written three books,
I mean, only one is published, but yes, now that I've written three books, sorry, interrupt.
Oh, no, that's great. Have you found any motifs or recurrent themes in your work as you've written these and gone over them?
Well, yes, I have several. I didn't have to just discover them. One thing is I'm very interested in making my detectives have family lives. I'm certainly not the only person to do that. I mean, Deborah Crombie's policeman and policewoman are married to each other. Her detectives are married and they have kids. So, I mean, it's more common, I would say. You know yourselves, as you talk to many mystery writers, for detectives, police detectives or private detectives, to be loners, to be, you know, to be people who aren't very approachable in many cases, often, you know, drinking a lot or not to have a sort of stable family life. But of course, most real police do have a stable family life. I hope it's stable for them. I mean,
hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
They probably get divorced a bit more than the average person, but most, just they're like most people. They go home, they have their kids and all of that, their spouses. So I, one of my themes is truly to give my detectives real lives at home as well as at work. So I have really tried to bring in issues with their kids, that especially with the older, Juliana's children are older, 10 and 15, more or less, that work into the themes. And I don't mean like one of her kids getting kidnapped and she has to rescue her, but, or him, but something that would be, make their lives seem more real. And of course, another theme for many people who write detective stories is to present interesting moral dilemmas. That's not perhaps a theme exactly, but I think you really do, without wanting, again, to be at all preachy. You want, mostly you just want your books to be entertaining. But I think a policeman must, and policewomen must, constantly face various kinds of moral dilemmas.
Yeah, absolutely.
So are you starting your book, your story, with a question then, rather than the character's dilemma, so to speak, or a character's growth? You're kind of more centering it around a question?
I wouldn't say that I have a big question in the back of my mind, but I do have certain themes that I want to deal with. And the pesticide begins with a young man in his early 20s tripping a policeman because he's stoned and he thinks it's funny, and the policeman hitting him with his billy club. And so one of the themes all the way through the book is the issue of police brutality. And I wrote this book, you know, I it was pre-George Floyd, actually, although it's coming out now. So, you know, but this is, you know, that was just an issue that the nation, that was a murder that the nation finally responded to. But I would say that, you know, this has been an issue for a long time in lots of countries, just the kinds of situations that policemen face where they have to act, where they might lose it and murder someone or hurt someone very bad.
Yeah.
That's one of my things.
Yeah.
In this book.
Yeah. It's one of those tough situations. Do you ever worry about that kind of being a little controversial in these times of getting involved in that sort of story?
First of all, I suppose it is a controversial issue, but there is a continuum between a case where a policeman, or I keep being very sexist here, I'll just say a police person. I'm not sure. I mean, in my book, I'm very careful, but here I am right on in public on the radio saying policeman, where a cop has to, is completely right. I mean, he's about to be shot and he has to, or she has to, here I am doing it again, the person has to defend themselves versus a murder that for us, I mean, for the nation is clearly a murder, as in the George Floyd situation. But there's a whole continuum of things in between. And I think that's where, you know, there's controversy. That's where people can debate. But it, you still have to look there. It's a case by case thing. I think everyone can, most people can see, they would just disagree about where to call it murder, but everyone can see that there are certain situations where someone has to defend themselves. So I don't know how controversial it really is as a general topic. I think on the case by case basis, it's very controversial. Does that make, do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah. Oh, for sure. Yeah. It's the particular elements of the case that really makes
it. Make, you know, where one person says.
Yeah. I just think that there's a type of attitude, but in the sense of how you approach it. Like if you're taking it from a, like some people will approach a story and take it from they're being sympathetic to police and to a police member rather than, let's say, the victim, and others will take it on the victim side. That's
absolutely,
that's what I mean. So people will, they tend to pick that out these days.
Yes. And well, you know, I don't live in the United States, so it could be that I'm very insensitive to the things that, but so far, the reactions, you know, it's, the book's only been out since the middle, late April, but, you know, it's not been out for that long, maybe not even 2 months yet. But I would say that I haven't had that kind of reaction where people have said, how dare you? You know, nobody has put that in a review or put that on my website. But, you know, there's plenty of time for that to still happen.
Let's hope that we can get that going now.
But I tried, of course, to show, one of the things I do, and this is in the beginning, so it's not a spoiler, is it's a debate already right at the beginning between the policewoman, my heroine, Juliana, and her husband, who's a journalist. And, you know, she is certainly not, she is seeing a, in a particular situation, in a riot, you know, she's seeing how frightened the policemen are, and frightened, I don't mean to call them cow, but, you know, they're in a horrible situation with a huge riot going on and people throwing Molotov cocktails at them and, you know, throwing rocks at them, and nobody's shooting at them because this is Switzerland. But and how are they to defend themselves, you know, and her husband is taking a much more sympathetic, a side that's much more sympathetic to the rioters. So, you know, I try to introduce both sides of the issue and let people decide for themselves. I hope that was the idea.
Well, that's kind of our, yeah, at the end of the book, but what is it you hope people take away from this story?
Well, now, you know, we've talked about all this serious stuff. I mean, what I hope people take away from it is that they've really enjoyed it, honestly, and that they found it exciting. And I hope they don't experience it as any kind of moral, you know, pounding on their head with any kind of moral message. I mean, we've been talking about messages and themes and things. But what you most want people to take away is that it was an exciting story and that they very much liked the characters enough that they would like to see them again. And certainly some of the reviews I've got have had people saying, I can't wait for the next one. So that's what you want to hear. And I also actually, more than the moral issues, which are there that we've been talking about, you know, I want to say, I also want people to take away a new vision of Switzerland, which is not just bankers and Alps and chocolate and watches and all of that stuff, but it's, a very small country. It has fewer people than New York City, which speaks four official languages and is full of fascinating people. And that they, you know, don't just learn about Swiss farming or Bernese farming. Bern is the canton that the city of Bern is in. Canton is like a state. But that they, you know, that they really get a sense of what these people are like. So all of that is certainly as important to me as that people maybe after all of this, after the enjoyment, that they would take away some thinking about issues like, what do I think about organic farming? What do I think about dealing marijuana? Which is also interesting because, of course, especially right now, it's still illegal in Switzerland, but many places don't have any problem with it. It's business now. So how do you deal with a legal situation when you know other places in the world this isn't illegal at all, that someone is dealing marijuana? All of those things, but certainly not just the message of, you know, oh, think about these serious issues like police brutality. It's very important. The planet and violence and all of these things are all in there, but God forbid you should read a mystery and come away, you know, feeling you've read a philosophy book. So,
Now I want to get to the rave. Okay, so there was a rave on a hot summer night. So is this something that you went out to get the feel and be able to write about a rave?
Well, I wasn't in the middle of it, but I was certainly, I mean, what I'm describing there in that section really did happen. It was a big dance events, you know, with floats and music and people drinking and having having a great time, that turned into the worst riot Bern has ever had. And so far, I was not in the middle of it, but I was certainly aware of it. I was on the edges of it. So, and what I also write about is a big youth alternative culture center. And there I definitely went in a number of times and was probably the oldest person around, but that was fine. You know, it wasn't a scary place. And it was funny that several of my friends said, you went into the writing school, because this is this big alternative culture center, which is covered with graffiti and has a reputation for being full of drug dealers. And you know, I had no discomfort at all being in there. So, part of doing your research is to go and experience these things. But I admit that I didn't get out there wearing a police shield and try to defend myself against the rioters. So,
I thought you started the riot.
Ah, then just so I could have something exciting to write about, that would have been a very clever idea.
Yeah, see, get out there and cause the trouble, and then you can write about it, and it's going to be very realistic.
Very.
Well, and so the publishing didn't sound like it was super easy for you. It sounded like you had a little bit of work to do there. And I think there's a lot of people out there that are trying to get published or want to get published and all that mm-hmm. stuff. And that, what did you learn from your 7 years of working at it?
It sounds biblical, doesn't it? When you talk about yeah. 7 years of labor, 7 years of labor.
That's right.
It is extremely discouraging. There's no way to get around it. You get rejection, you know, you write these nice letters, and I would even often read a book that an agent had. I am a fast reader, but not that fast, but I would constantly, you know, if I wanted to write to an agent, I'd try to skim a book that they'd agented, I mean, it was under them, so I could, you know, realistically say, I like such and such book that you handled. Sometimes that was a stretch, but I tried not to lie too much. But so I really worked hard trying to find an agent and, you know, work. And that is, to get a book published with a big publisher, you have to have an agent in the United States, or as far as I know, in the UK, which I also tried. And it's very discouraging to be turned down. And of course, you don't know why you're turned down. You know, you're turned down over and over. So, I mean, I'm not giving people encouragement, am I? I'm just making them feel terrible. This is the reality. So, I think there, you have to ask yourself periodically, should I stop? You know, that is one of the big questions that you ask yourself. Am I persistent in a positive way, or am I being, delusional? And this is just, I just have to accept that this isn't good enough, or it is very good, but people just don't want to publish it, or whatever the reason. You know, obviously it's good enough now that it is published. But I realize in a way this sounds like I'm putting my own work down, but I don't think so. I think it's important to keep saying, hey, I think this is a good piece of writing. I need to try to make it better, but I also just need to keep trying. And I did. I think people should accept, though, that it's not them. You know, it could be that it's a terrible book. And that's the other thing you have to keep asking yourself, you know, should I give up? Is it time to give up? Or, of course, self-publish, which is also a possibility. So I really haven't given any advice, have I? except trying to keep your spirits up and considering regularly whether this is worth it. You don't want to become obsessed. I mean, you don't want to become, if it's, you weigh it constantly. Is it worth continuing or is it not continuing? And that's hard.
Yeah. Well, I think that's just part of it, isn't it? That's just the whole thing. I think people realize that if they're going to try and publish, it's kind of a, there's going to be a lot of that rejection and struggle at times. It just doesn't all happen overnight. So, I mean, that's all part of it. Are you glad that you went through a publisher, but?
Yes, but that isn't, I mean, and that is, I think, being a, in some way, perhaps being somewhat conventional, that, you know, there is a way when you finally get a book accepted, it is a validation. Of course, if you're Andy, isn't it? And I guess he pronounces it Weir, I think, you know, the Martian, he self-published and his, you know, his books are, his first book was self-published and now he's on his third, as far as I know, which is brilliant. I mean, his books are great. So you can get valid, you can self-publish and be validated as well. But having a quote unquote real publisher, is somebody in the profession saying, I really like this. And, also then you get a really, in my case, I get, you know, a wonderful person, Dan Mayer, who's the editorial director of Seventh Street Books, who also gives me feedback and who, you know, who I can email back and forth with and ask questions to. I mean, if you're lucky, you know, you don't just get, you get a person as well, an editor, someone to work with you that, and that is great, which you don't get if you self-publish.
Right. Yeah. It's important. How's your interaction on social media? Do you like fans and readers to follow you on different social media platforms, or do you have a website? How do people find you?
I have a website, and I'm using, because I am certainly not the only Kim Hayes out there. I'm using Kim Hayes Byrne, without any period, you know, without any periods, just Kim Hayes Byrne, B-E-R-N, my city that I write about. And so www.kimhaysbyrne.com, that's my website. And I am on Twitter and Facebook. I write a blog, which is on my website, about Swiss. That's the most fun. I mean, writing my books is fun, but I also try to write regularly on some interesting Swiss issue. And recently I wrote about the days that you're supposed to plant your garden, the traditional Swiss days for planting your garden, which come after what are called the ice saints. There are certain saints days that are traditionally not been, you know, come just before you should plant. And you should never plant during the ice saint days. And this is the kind of thing I think is really fun, just finding Swiss traditions and Swiss festivals and things to write about, so people get a little taste of Swiss culture. But that, yes, I do that. Now, am I an avid Facebook and Twitter person? Unfortunately, I'm not that generation. I mean, I'm sure people my generation have adopted it, but it hasn't happened to me. I'd always rather be writing and working on the newest mystery than tweeting. But I'm working on it. I'm getting there. You can find me on these. I am there.
Well, that's.
Haven't got Instagram or TikTok yet. I've got to work up to that.
Yeah, you're gonna have to start practicing.
Right.
Now, I guess, you know, when you cover, when you say Byrn, it sounds very important. So in the series, is it going to be written as a character in itself?
The city.
Yeah.
You know, that's interesting you say that, because when I think, I love reading Donna Leon. I like those Venice books very, very much. And there, you know, it is very clear that as much as I love her detective and his family, the main character in her books, in a way, is Venice. You're just constantly learning about Venice and here, you know, all the life of Venice and how people live in Venice. And yes, I really would like for people to take away, as I said before, to take away a sense of Byrne, whether it's actually you know, you could say whether it's a character or not, I don't know, you know, I mean, we're talking metaphorically anyway, but it's very important. And another character, not really, but something that's very important in the city is the river, which where Bern is created. The old part of the city is literally created by a loop of river. The river is called the Aare, A-A-R-E, the Aare, which flows into the Rhine. And so, you know, it's a big river that flows through Switzerland. Well, flows not through all of Switzerland, but it flows out of the Alps, as most rivers in Switzerland do, flows out of the Alps. And it's also in my books all the time, because you're constantly crossing bridges over this river. In the second book, it begins with someone drowning in this river. My book that's coming out, that's called Sons and Brothers, which will be coming out in next April. So I hope Bern is a good character in my books.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like it, you know, and that river is a great place to put bodies. You can hide them there.
Yeah. Well, this one, in book number two, the body popped up again, so it didn't work out so well.
But, no. Well, you got to tie it down because it floats after a few days, right?
Yeah.
It rises to the top. We got to be ready for this.
Right. You have to weigh it down.
That's right. We don't need it to be floating in a couple of days. We're in trouble then. We're caught, you know. Uh-huh. Now, your stories are each going to stand alone. You don't have to have one.
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, there, of course, there's a meta. You know, when you put a relation, especially if you want to create a sort of an ongoing tension / romance, whatever, between two characters, and if you give them children and families, there's going to be a meta story. You know, you're always going to have certain continuation about, you know, the daughter's boyfriend and the, you know, the toddler in kindergarten, whatever. And plus the relationship between the two detectives and their colleagues. But each book will be able to stand alone with some reference, you know, to the earlier things.
Yeah. What's your writing process like? Are you the person that has to be in a quiet room or go away, or do you have to have a lot of time, or can you do that? Can you say, okay, well, 10 to 2, I'm going to write, and you sit down and write, or do you have to be in a certain mood?
Well, first of all, I'm in awe of people that can go to, if there are such writers, and I gather there are, they can go to Starbucks or the, you know, the local nice cafe full of people talking and sit and write their book. I could not do that. I do sit in an office with, you know, in front of the computer. I do have a nice window, you know, that I can look out of when I want to be distracted. But I started writing basically when I started writing, I stopped working, which thank God I could afford to do thanks to my husband. I mean, most people can't. And I would sit down at my desk by 9 o'clock in the morning and try to write 6 hours a day. I didn't try to write 8 hours a day. I mean, I tried to, you know, there was research, there are always other things you could be doing, but I really did try to write and only on weekdays. So I was very, in a sense, it was disciplined, and in a sense it wasn't, because I gave myself breaks, you know, I took the weekends off and certainly some days it was really a sense of, I'm going to just type out a certain number of words. I would not say that I'm very fast. I'm in awe of people who produce more than one book. There are people who produce a book a year and more than one book a year. They have several series going. I can't imagine how they do it, but it's, you know, hats off.
You have to be insane.
I didn't say that. You said that.
Oh, I said it because I do that. And I think I'm totally insane.
Oh, you do it, Dave.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
No, my mind's totally, I'm crazy.
Okay. Well, I mean, but, you know, if you're happy, then it doesn't matter. I mean, I just find that I want to do a lot of other things, and I want to have time to take walks and drink coffees and go on vacation. And, you know, keep my marriage from breaking up, you know, because it's not fair to just sit here and work all the time. But listen, anyone who can do it, I think it's great. Of course, the funny thing is, because I wrote these books beforehand, I'm now going to be able to bring out three books, one a year, if I want to, and if the publisher thinks I should. But it's a lie. It's a lie, because they took me 2 years. So at least I could do it in 2 years. I mean, at least I don't need 10.
Yeah. Well, you know, we take whatever we need, you know.
And yes. And also you do, you know, each person is different and you do what you have to do.
Yeah. You know, you have to go to a rave party, you go.
That's, or start a riot.
Yeah.
Right?
If you want to start a riot, then that's what, you know, you get out there and start it.
Exactly.
You know, record it and then get home and write it. That's crazy. Well, I appreciate everything and that you came on the show. And so now the book we're talking about is Pesticide. It's Linder and Donna Talley, Mystery. And, of course, our guest is the author of that, Kim Hayes. Thanks for being on the show.
Thank you so much. I've really enjoyed myself. Thank you both.
Thanks, Kim.
Tired of wasting time trying to decide what to watch on your streaming service? Go to our website and look for the Martino Movie Reviews.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show is over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Yeah.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show is over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Yeah. Good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.